Mrs. Cratchit, Cratchit's wife, dressed out but poorly in a twice-turned gown, but brave in ribbons, which are cheap and make a goodly show for sixpence, laid the cloth, assisted by Belinda Cratchit, second of her daughters, also brave in ribbons, while Master Peter Cratchit plunged a fork into the saucepan of potatoes and, getting the corners of his monstrous shirt collar, Bob's private property conferred upon his son and heir in honour of the day, into his mouth, rejoiced to find himself so gallantly attired, and yearned to show his linen in the fashionable parks. And now, two smaller Cratchits, boy and girl, came tearing in, screaming that outside the baker's they had smelt the goose and known it for their own, and basking in luxurious thoughts of sage and onion, these young Cratchits danced about the table and exalted Master Peter Cratchit to the skies, while he, not proud, although his collars nearly choked him, blew the fire until the slow potatoes bubbling up knocked loudly at the saucepan lid to be let out and peeled. "Whatever has got your precious father, then?" said Mrs. Cratchit. "And your brother, Tiny Tim? And Martha warn't as late last Christmas Day by half an hour." "Here's Martha, mother," said a girl, appearing as she spoke. "Here's Martha, mother," cried the two young Cratchits. "Hurrah! There's such a goose, Martha." "Why, bless your heart alive, my dear, how late you are," said Mrs. Cratchit, kissing her a dozen times and taking off her shawl and bonnet for her. "Well, we'd a deal of work to finish up last night," replied the girl, "and had to clear away this morning, mother." "Never mind, as long as you come," said Mrs. Cratchit. "Sit you down before the fire, my dear, and have a warm lob, bless you." "No, no, no, there's father coming," cried the two young Cratchits, who were everywhere at once. "Hide, Martha, hide." So Martha hid herself, and in came little Bob, the father, with at least 3 foot of comforter dangling down before him, and his threadbare clothes darned up and brushed to look seasonable, and Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Alas for Tiny Tim. He bore a little crutch and had his limbs supported by an iron frame.
"Why, where's our Martha?" cried Bob Cratchit, looking round.
"Not coming," said Mrs. Cratchit.
"Not coming?"
said sudden declension in his high spirits, for he'd been Tim's blood horse all the way from church and had come home rampant.
"Not coming upon Christmas Day?"
Martha didn't like to see him disappointed if it were only in joke. So she came out from behind the closet door and ran into his arms, while the two young Cratchits hustled Tiny Tim and bore him off into the wash house that he might hear the pudding singing in the copper. "And how did little Tim behave?" asked Mrs. Cratchit, when Bob had hugged his daughter to his heart's content.
"As good as gold," said Bob, "and better.
Somehow he gets thoughtful, sitting by himself so much, and thinks the strangest things you ever heard. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him in the church because he was a cripple, and it might be pleasant to them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see."
Bob's voice was tremulous when he told them this. It trembled more when he said that Tiny Tim was growing strong and hearty.
His active little crutch was heard upon the floor, and back came Tiny Tim before another word was spoken, escorted by his brother and sister to his stool beside the fire. And while Bob, turning up his cups, as if, poor fellow, they were capable of being made more shabby, compounded some hot mixture in the jug with gin and lemons and stirred it round and round and put it on the hob to simmer, Master Peter and the two ubiquitous young Cratchits went to fetch the goose, with which they soon returned in high procession. Mrs. Cratchit made the gravy ready beforehand in a little saucepan, hissing hot, Master Peter mashed the potatoes with incredible vigor. Miss Belinda sweetened up the applesauce. Martha dusted the hot plates. Bob took Tiny Tim beside him in a tiny corner at the table. The two young Cratchits set chairs for everybody, not forgetting themselves, and then crammed spoons into their mouths, lest they should shriek for goose before their turn came to be helped. At last, the dishes were set on, and grace was said. It was succeeded by a breathless pause, as Mrs. Cratchit, looking slowly all along the carving knife, prepared to plunge it in the goose. But when she did, and when the long-expected gush of stuffing issued forth, one murmur of delight rose all round the board. There never was such a goose. Bob said he didn't believe there was such a goose cooked. Yet everyone had had enough, and the youngest Cratchits in particular were steeped in sage and onion to the eyebrows. But now, the plates being changed by Miss Belinda, Mrs. Cratchit left the room alone to take the pudding up and bring it in. Suppose it should not be done enough. Suppose it should break in turning out. Suppose somebody should have got over the wall of the backyard and stolen it while they were merry with the goose. A supposition at which the two young Cratchits became livid. All sorts of horrors were supposed. How? A great deal of steam. The pudding was out of the copper. A smell like a washing day. That was the cloth. A smell like an eating house and a pastry cook's next door to each other's with a laundress's next door to that. That was the pudding. In half a minute, Mrs. Cratchit entered, flushed but smiling proudly, with the pudding. A wonderful pudding. Bob Cratchit said, and he said it calmly too, that he regarded that as the greatest success achieved by Mrs. Cratchit since their marriage. Mrs. Cratchit said, well, now the weight was off her mind, she would confess she'd had her doubts about the quantity of flour. Everybody had something to say about it, but nobody said or thought that it was at all a small pudding for a large family. It would have been flat heresy to do so. Any Cratchit would have blushed to hint at such a thing. Well, at last the dinner was done. The cloth was cleared, the hearth swept and the fire made up, the compound in the jug being tasted and considered perfect. Apples and oranges were put upon the table and a shovelful of chestnuts on the fire. Then all the Cratchit family drew round the hearth in what Bob Cratchit called a circle, meaning half a one. And at Bob Cratchit's elbow stood the family display of glass. Two tumblers and a custard cup without a handle. These held the hot stuff from the jug, however, as well as golden goblets would have done. And Bob served it out with beaming looks while the chestnut on the fire sputtered and crackled noisily. Then Bob proposed, "A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us," which all the family re-echoed. "God bless us, every one," said Tiny Tim, the last of all. He sat very close to his father's side upon his little stool. Bob held his withered little hand to his, as if he loved the child and wished to keep him by his side, and dreaded that he might be taken from him.
"Spirit," said Scrooge, with an interest he had never felt before, "tell me if Tiny Tim will live."
And the ghost replied, "If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die."
"No, no," said Scrooge. "Oh, no, kind spirit, say he will be spared."
Scrooge bent his head and, trembling, cast his eyes upon the ground. But he raised them speedily on hearing his own name.
"Mr. Scrooge,"
said Bob. I'll give you Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast.
The founder of the feast, indeed, cried Mrs. Cratchit, reddening. Oh, I wish I had him here. I'd give a piece of my mind to feast upon, and I hope he'd have a good appetite for it.
My dear, said Bob, the children, Christmas Day.
It should be Christmas Day, I'm sure, said she, on which one drinks the health of such an odious, stingy, hard, unfeeling man as Mr. Scrooge.
Well, you know he is, Robert. Nobody knows it better than you do, poor fella.
My dear, was Bob's mild answer. Christmas Day?
I'll drink his health for your sake, and the day's, said Mrs. Cratchit.
Not for his. Long life to him. A Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, I've no doubt.
The children drank the toast after. It was the first of their proceedings which had no heartiness in it. Tiny Tim drank it last of all, but he didn't care tuppence for it. Scrooge was the ogre of the family. The mention of his name cast a dark shadow on the party, which was not dispelled for full 5 minutes. When at last it was dispelled, and with laughter and innocent joking and good-natured chaff and chestnuts and a song here and there, they made merry. They were not a handsome family. They were not well-dressed. Their shoes were far from being waterproof. Their clothes were scanty, and Peter might have known, and very likely did, the inside of a pawnbroker's. But they were happy, grateful, pleased with one another, and contented with the time. Scrooge and the spirit went on to many homes, rich, modest, poor, shabby, to the lonely farms, the dusty streets, the moors, the mines, the lighthouses, the ships where the joy and love of Christmastide were celebrated by rough and lonesome men. And then the jovial spirit disappeared.
The third spirit of Christmas slowly approached Scrooge. It did not speak. It gave no reply to his questions as it took him with it through the foggy streets to slums foul and narrow, through the city where groups of merchants with callous voices spoke of a mysterious he who had at long last given up his scraping and grasping, his meannesses, his grinding of the poor and the unfortunate. Whom could they mean? The spirit took him to Bob Cratchit's house. The noisy little Cratchits were still as statues. The mother and her daughters were sewing. Peter was reading from a book. The words. And he took a child and set him in the midst of them. The mother laid her work upon the table.
The color hurts my eyes, she said.
Ah, poor Tiny Tim.
Tiny Tim, thy childish essence was from God.
But it was not Tiny Tim they meant when they spoke of he, but of one whose name was never mentioned in tones of affection or regret. Ebenezer Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge.
No, spirit, hear me. I am not the man I was. Assure me that I yet may change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me.
he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost.
Yes! And the bedpost was his own. The bed his own. The room, best of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in. Oh, I will live in the past, the present and the future, Scrooge repeated as he scrambled out of bed. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and the Christmas time be praised for this. I say it on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees.
His hands were busy with his garments all the time, turning them inside out, putting them on upside down.
I don't know what to do, cried Scrooge,
laughing and crying in the same breath.
I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy New Year to all the world.
He had frisked into the sitting room. There's the saucepan that the gruel was in. There's the door by which the ghost of Jacob Marley entered. There's the corner where the ghost of Christmas Present sat. There's the window where I saw the wandering spirits. It's all right. It's all true. It all happened. Oh,
I don't know what day of the month it is. I don't know anything. I'm quite a baby. Never mind. I don't care. I'd rather be a baby.
Running to the window, he opened it and put out his head. No fog, no mist. Clear, bright, jovial, stirring, cold, golden sunlight, heavenly sky, sweet fresh air, merry bells. Oh, glorious, glorious. What's today? Calling downward to a boy in Sunday clothes.
Aye,
returned the boy.
What's today, my fine fellow? Today? My Christmas Day.
It's Christmas Day. Christmas Day. I haven't missed it. Oh, the spirits have done it all in one night. Oh, they can do anything they like. Of course they can. Of course they can. Hello, my fine fellow. Hello.
Did you know the Poulters in the next street but one at the corner? I should hope I did.
An intelligent boy.
Do you know whether they've stolen the prize turkey that was hanging up there? No, not the little prize turkey, the big one. What, the one as big as me?
Oh, what a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him. Yes, my buck.
Why, it's hanging there now.
Is it? Is it? Well, go and buy it. Go and buy it and tell them to bring it here, and I can give them the direction where to take it.
Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown.
The boy was off like a shot.
I'll send it to Bob Cratchit. He sharp nose sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim.
The hand in which he wrote the address was not a steady one. He went downstairs to open the street door, ready for the coming of the poulterer's man. As he stood there, the knocker caught his eye.
I shall love it as long as I live, cried Scrooge, patting it with his hand. I scarcely ever looked at it before. What an honest expression it has in its face. It's a wonderful knocker. Here's the turkey.
It was a turkey. He never could have stood upon his legs, that bird. He would have snapped them off short in a minute like two sticks of sealing wax.
Why, it's impossible to carry that to Camden Town. You must have a cab.
He paid for the turkey, the cab, recompensed the boy, sat down breathless in his chair again and chuckled till he cried. He dressed himself. He went to church and walked about the streets and patted children on the head, and questioned beggars, and looked down into the kitchens of houses, and up to the wind at any walk, that anything could give him so much happiness. In the afternoon, he turned his steps towards his nephew's house.
Why, bless me soul, cried Fred. Who's this?
It's I, your Uncle Scrooge. I've come to dinner. Will you let me in, Fred?
Let him in. It's a mercy he didn't shake his hand off. He was at home in 5 minutes. Wonderful party, wonderful games, wonderful, wonderful happiness. But he was early at the office next morning. Oh, he was early there. If he could only be there first, catch Bob Cratchit coming late. And he did. Yes, he did.
9. No Bob. 8:15. No Bob. 18 minutes and a half behind his time.
His hat was off before he opened the door. His comforter, too. He was on his stool in a jiffy, driving away with his pen.
Hello, growled Scrooge. What do you mean by coming here at this time of day?
I'm very sorry, sir, said Bob. It's only once a year, sir, pleaded Bob. I was making rather merry yesterday.
Now I'll tell you what, my friend, said Scrooge. I am not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore, I am about to raise your salary.
A Merry Christmas, Bob.
A merrier Christmas, Bob, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary, and we'll discuss your affair this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl. Make up the fire, Bob. Make up the fire and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.